Dr. Peter McCullough says the most common question he's asked is, how do I get this out of my body? Spike Support Formula is the only product that contains ingredients researched to block and dissolve spike protein in the bloodstream. So whether you got the shot, had a bad bout of COVID, or are worried about shedding, there is something you could do now to protect yourself. Head to twc.health/Kirk to buy the wellness company Spike Support Formula and get back to feeling your best. Use promo code Kirk at checkout for 10% off your order. That is promo code Kirk for 10% off your order. Hey, everybody. What's going on with artificial intelligence? Pretty heavy episode here with Joe Allen. I think you'll love it. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. If you want to support our show directly, go to charliekirk.com and click on the members tab. That's charliekirk.com and click on the members tab. Get involved with Turning Point USA today at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Start a high school or college chapter today at tpusa.com. Okay, I want to encourage you guys. You have got to get your tickets today to AmFest. It's been there for a couple years. It is a game-changing, life-changing event. It has secured the title of the largest multi-day conservative gathering in history. You know, over 10,000 people attend. You better get your tickets. They're popping. AmFest has an electrifying environment, leads the charge to fight the American culture war. As we bring you to the epicenter of freedom, the speakers are unbelievable. You might ask, well, when is it? It's December 16th, 17th, 18th, 19th, 20th. And come on, I mean, these speakers, hold your phone. Tucker Carlson, Glenn Beck, Patrick Bet-David, Candace Owens, Rob Schneider, Roseanne Barr, Dennis Prager, Ali Beth Stuckey, James O'Keefe, Riley Gaines, Ben Carson, Jason Whitlock, Gad Saad, Brandon Tatum, Seth Dillon, Jack Posobiec, Benny Johnson, Yanmi Park, Michael Seifert, James Lindsay, Steve Bannon, Eric Metaxas, Donald Trump Jr., Josh Hawley, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Matt Gaetz, and bigger names than even that to be announced soon. So get your ticket today, amfest.com. That is amfest.com. You're going to really love it. I think when you come, you'll meet new people. Maybe you want to find a husband or a wife. Come to AmFest. Find a best friend. Come to AmFest. Have kids that you're afraid are slipping to the liberal side? Go to AmFest. Have conservative kids that you want to give them the best Christmas gift ever? AmFest.com. Meet your heroes. See them in person. Plus, there's breakouts and media row. It's an incredible, incredible event. AmFest.com. Just coming in a couple weeks, Phoenix, Arizona. We're doing our show live, by the way, from media row. Love seeing all of you taking selfies. It's great. We spent a couple hours there last year. It was really amazing. AmFest.com. This four-day event is packed with empowering speakers, hundreds of patriotic partner organizations, and the America-loving community that you have been searching for. Don't miss on the amazing concert, too. And let me just, I mean, come on. Tucker Carlson, Candace Owens, Rob Schneider, Roseanne Barr, Dennis Prager, Ali Beth Stuckey, James O'Keefe, Patrick Bet-David, Glenn Beck. I mean, just drop everything and come to Phoenix. AmFest.com. AmFest.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the loan experts I trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. There is some serious AI news right now. It is really hard to follow. Joining us now is the expert, Joe Allen, author of Dark Eon. I think I said that right. Joe Allen. Transhumanism, the War Against Humanity. Joe, what is going on with Sam Altman? He leaves. He's back. What is going on here?
Well, Charlie, at present, he is back at OpenAI. It appears that the board who ousted him is being replaced by a new set of experts, including Larry Summers, incidentally. Altman has long been the sort of face of AI, and it really, when you saw the release of GPT about this time last year, he became, in a sense, the voice of AI, and especially AGI. Altman tends towards what's called accelerationism, just the idea that these technologies should be pushed forward as fast as possible, whatever the costs. On the other side of it, members of the board such as Helen Toner or Adam D'Angelo, they tend much more towards the effective altruist sort of perspective or rationalists. On that end, they also want to see the development of AGI, artificial general intelligence, or artificial godlike intelligence. The real difference is how fast you get there and what risks you're willing to accept to have an AI that they believe will be superior to human beings in pretty much every way and will ultimately replace every intellectual job and even, as robotics increase, every blue-collar job.
So when do they think that will be developed? And I mean, are there any sort of guardrails on the development of this? Some people even claim it's impossible. Some think that we're a year away. What do you think, Joe?
You know, it ranges, and I am not going to predict whether or not they will even create AGI, whether they they'll do it in the timelines they're talking about. But I will say that I do believe that the AGI projects that we're seeing right now have been built up by such a high degree of hype that it's very likely that something like an AGI will be developed and billed as an AGI. What's really surprised me, Charlie, is how many people that were also fairly skeptical are now talking about timelines of 5 to 7 years for the creation of AGI. That includes Elon Musk, also Sam Altman. And they really, I think, whether they truly believe it or whether it's a sales pitch, what they're doing is cultivating a mindset in the public consciousness that is going to be much more amenable to the existence of AGI, or at the very least, is going to be much more likely to accept the possibility of its existence. What that means is that you will have tech corporations in possession of a technology that they will say is justifiably superior to human beings and therefore should be the source of authority for questions ranging from medicine to military strategy and even the proper upbringing of children.
Do you think the government should regulate this?
I do believe the government should regulate it. How much effect that would actually have, I'm very doubtful. One of the real issues you have, let's say that the government puts stringent regulations in place. Let's say that the government were to take the advice of the people who wrote the open letter coming out of the Future of Life Institute, in which they argued that no AI should be created above the level of GPT-4. That's the current iteration. What you would see almost immediately are the tech corporations in America working on this that ranges from Microsoft with OpenAI, Google with DeepMind, Amazon and Microsoft both with Anthropic, and then a former DeepMind co-founder who founded Inflection AI, on and on. These corporations will simply move overseas. They already have labs overseas. And you would also probably see technology transfers to countries like China, perhaps India, certainly different nations in Europe, including the UK or Germany, so on and so forth. And so it's really a matter of, these AI projects are best thought of sort of like mycelia. And what you see in Silicon Valley is the mushroom. You could destroy all of those mushrooms in Silicon Valley. They will start popping up all over the world.
So the kind of understand the flow of capital here is incredible. I mean, OpenAI is the fastest growing tech company ever. It's not even close. And so Sam Altman is back here, and there's allegedly a board and a power struggle. I mean, your analysis seems to be awfully heavy, Joe. It doesn't seem like anything is going to slow these people down.
I don't think so. The only thing that would slow them down is their own decision-making processes. And that's really not going to, I just don't see that. I think that's a prediction I can confidently make. These people are so fixated on this. This is, as I argue in my book and have argued for years on the War Room, this is a techno-religion. And so to take a more Luddite position or even really cautious position would be tantamount to a sort of blasphemy to them. They see this as the ultimate realization of human endeavor. They believe it will be the kind of culmination or even the justification for human existence. They think that these AI programs will eventually lead to such extended lifespans that people are basically immortal. There will be radical abundance, no want whatsoever. And of course, Elon Musk is the spearhead of this. They believe that AI will enable humans to colonize the solar system and the galaxy, or perhaps the darker scenario, that the machines themselves are our successors, our sort of mind children, and that they will, in fact, carry the torch of life and consciousness and reason forward. So as long as this techno-religion persists, and I believe it will, as long as there are technologies that some humans believe are worthy of worship, that it will guide the development of these technologies. It will guide the deployment of these technologies. And more so, as I mentioned earlier, more and more so, you see it seeping into the public consciousness. You could think of that as sort of the Orthodox Church or the exoteric church that reflects the esoteric interests of those in Silicon Valley and elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole political angle that we'll explore. This is a way that they'll be able to impose wokeism because somebody has to write the core programming, and we see that with ChatGPT. So can you explain the Microsoft versus OpenAI philosophy? And then also there's Bard from Google as well. Explain that to us.
Yeah, so Microsoft invested $10 billion in OpenAI. They have access to their weights, meaning that Microsoft, in effect, now owns the technologies being developed at OpenAI. OpenAI came on the map with DALL-E, the AI art generator, and also then, of course, ChatGPT. I think it was like 100 million subscribers almost immediately, just completely unprecedented. And Microsoft, you can just think of them really as the corporate arm of what is ultimately an ideological organization. OpenAI was founded with Elon Musk and Ilya Sutskever, of course, Sam Altman there. And then the ideas that they were working with were somewhere between accelerationism and effective altruism. But all of them wanted to see the creation of this AGI. Microsoft, I think they're probably more interested in profit, but when you have a product like OpenAI is billing, a machine that can think like a human or a machine that will eventually think better than a human, you can see where their interests lie. It was those, though, on the effective altruist end of the spectrum at OpenAI that have really been digging their heels in. Of course, that led to the ouster of Sam Altman for just a few days. Microsoft said they would take Sam Altman on. 700 of the 770 employees at OpenAI said they would go with him. So you can see really where the weight of interest is in the organizations as a whole.
Yeah, I mean, I feel incredible darkness around this entire thing. This, you know, they say, oh, we're going to solve all the world's problems. I really haven't met anybody who's excited about this unless you're a very creepy person, honestly. Like if you're creepy and weird and wear a spacesuit, you get excited about this. I get almost nothing but just really, really dark vibes around this. Hey, everybody, I've got some thrilling news to share with you. The Buy Optimizer's Black Friday mega sale is in full swing. And guess what? It's not just a one-day thing. It's happening throughout the entire month of November. This mega deal is available only for my listeners, only with my code. Yep, you heard me right. It's our little secret. Now, you already know that I have unwavering trust in Buy Optimizers. These guys are the real deal when it comes to improving digestion. And let's not forget about their top-of-the-line magnesium. It's truly the best on the market. Plus, they back up their products with a rock-solid 365-day money-back guarantee, no questions asked. Now is the time of year when you fill up your shopping carts and stock up on Buy Optimizers goodness. Trust me when I say this, you won't find a better Black Friday deal anywhere, not even on mighty Amazon. The biggest discount you can get and amazing gifts with purchases are available only on my page, buyoptimizers.com/Kirk, with promo code Kirk10. We all have these never-ending Black Friday wish lists, but this year I challenge you to put your health at the top of the list. I love Buy Optimizers. I use their products. They're terrific. So why wait? Choose health over unnecessary things this Black Friday. Head over to buyoptimizers.com/Kirk and enter code Kirk10 at checkout. Remember, it's buyoptimizers.com/Kirk, promo code Kirk10. Do not miss out on this mega deal for my listeners only. So check it out, buyoptimizers.com, promo code Kirk10.
Joe, there is an undercurrent of the AI talk.
by inevitability. And so I want to just push back a little bit. We've had you on the show before. There is a chance that some of this is more bluster than rooted in reality, meaning that their Star Trek world they want to create is not exactly seamless. Is there a chance, based on what you've seen, that AI becomes a glorified parlor trick and some of this kind of vaporizes? And for example, there has been self-driving cars is a good example. By 2018, we were supposed to have nothing but self-driving cars. They're still rare, actually, right now, for a lot of different reasons. So there is a chance. By the way, we could be totally wrong. This stuff could be, we could have sentience in 5 months, right? Or it could be 50 years and just it turns out the tech can't get to that level. Help us unpack this, Joe Allen.
Yeah, Charlie, there's at least two levels of this that really have to be taken into account. You have the advertisement, right? You have the promotion of these things, the hype around them, and then you have the actual product. Oftentimes, almost all the time, the hype outstrips the actual capabilities of the product. What really stunned everybody about ChatGPT, of course, it's been ridiculed for all sorts of good reasons, but the fact remains that there was never a system like this before. This was a dream that was finally coming to realization. The very first chatbot was developed in the 60s, and it basically stayed at that level until roughly 10 or so years ago, and then just really exploded with the development of transformers and the use of transformers by OpenAI. So what this means is you're never to take what they're saying at face value. But I think that to simply dismiss everything as just hype is to miss the actual power of these technologies. You'd mentioned self-driving cars. They have certainly lagged behind the promises of Elon Musk or Google, but the self-driving cars as they exist right now are really excellent. They're not perfect, but statistically, they're in fact safer than human drivers. It's a very, very small sample compared to a very large sample, but it's still the fact is that these systems do work. The real barrier is that human beings don't want to crash because a robot screwed up. And there aren't really any ethical norms in place for what happens if a robot runs a child over, for instance. So as we're moving forward into this period, as we're moving into an era in which these tech corporations consolidate more and more power over our politics, over our economies, and most importantly, over the public's consciousness, over our minds, you have to move into it with real skepticism. But it would be a real mistake to simply dismiss it all as just simply a parlor trick. It's a parlor trick with a fairly impressive rabbit coming out of the hat.
Talk about energy. You say the use of transformers. In order to get AI at scale, I'd imagine it's going to require a ton of energy, maybe building entire hydroelectric dams or nuclear power plants. How energy intensive is AI?
Extremely. There's a wonderful book by a lefty, and it's very PC, but it's very based as far as energy goes. Kate Crawford's The Atlas of AI. But one of the things that she really emphasizes is for all of their talk of green economies and green energy, AI companies such as Microsoft, Google, so on, they use up enormous amounts of energy in their data centers and their server farms. Right now, Microsoft is working on linking their data centers to small nuclear power plants. So it's going to be extremely energy intensive. And I think the real takeaway from that is that when people like Apple or people like Google come off with these platitudes about green energy, they are among the largest carbon footprints on the planet. They have no standing there.
That's really remarkable. What can the everyday man do to fight against this obvious dystopian, I think, demonic, satanic push from Silicon Valley?
Well, number one, brace yourself and prepare to be surprised. Also, prepare to be disappointed. Number two, I think that really for those who are already rooted in a traditional view of the universe, the specter of an AI god shouldn't really threaten their deepest core beliefs. Now, on the other hand, when one thinks about, for instance, the second beast creating an image of the first beast in Revelation, which can speak and to which all people on the earth should kneel, it does perhaps fit into a traditionalist perspective in a very sinister way. But one way or the other, I think that the real thing that people have to do is decide where their boundaries are, and they will be called to defend them strenuously, just as we are with mass immigration, just as we are with the sexual revolution.
Check, Joe Allen's doing a tour. We'll put it on charliekirk.com. Joe, see you at AmFest. Biggest change to our economy we've seen in hundreds of years. The world is in flames, and Bidenomics is a complete and total disaster. But it won't ruin my day. That's because I start my day with a hot America First cup of blackout coffee. Now, I've been trying to trim how much coffee I have, but when I have coffee, boom, it's blackout coffee. This coffee is 100% America and 0% grift. Blackout Coffee is 100% committed to conservative values, from sourcing the beans to the roasting process, customer support, and shipping. They embody true American values and accept no compromise on taste or quality. By the way, I was traveling recently, and somebody brought me a cup of coffee, and it tasted really bad. It was really bad. I said, "Where's my blackout?" And they said, "We didn't bring the blackout on this trip." And I was really disappointed. It was a tough day. When you get used to Blackout Coffee, you know what I mean. Go to blackoutcoffee.com/Charlie. Use coupon code Charlie for 20% off your first order. By the way, it's kind of coffee season, isn't it? It gets dark around like 3:30. It's cloudy. It's not exactly the most uplifting weather. You kind of need to pick me up sometimes around 2 p.m. Go to blackoutcoffee.com/Charlie. Be awake, not woke. That is blackoutcoffee.com/Charlie. Promo code Charlie. The taste is amazing. It is smooth. And people know that I need my cup of coffee in the morning. Not too much, not over the top. But if it's not blackout, then the mood is not so good. Go south. Go to blackoutcoffee.com/Charlie. Great company. blackoutcoffee.com/Charlie. Promo code Charlie. We have been fired up about the Minot Air Force Base story. And joining us now is Senator Kramer, as well as Mary Grainer and Carmen Sirota, ladies of Another View. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the program.
Hey, good to see you.
Thanks for having us, Charlie. And thanks for accommodating my doing two shows at once.
Oh, yeah. No problem. So, Senator, you sent out a great statement. Thank you for that and your quick response. I deeply appreciate it. On this troubling development from the Minot Air Force Base, what have you learned? I know you have relationships there and you're privately dialoguing. What can you share with our audience in regards to the breaking news story yesterday?
Oh, so thanks, Charlie, for the opportunity. I did. I sent a text immediately in the morning to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, C.Q. Brown, who is a former chief of staff of the Air Force. And then I had a pretty lengthy telephone conversation with the chief of staff of the Air Force, General David Alden, yesterday, as well as a lot of staff back and forth. And what I learned was that, what I learned was somewhat comforting, but not adequate. And what I learned was that one person listening to a radio ad reference to the event took it upon themselves to send out this little alarm message, if you will, to a number of the sergeants in the security forces squadron at the Minot Air Force Base. And so the people understand Minot Air Force Base is the only Air Force Base in the world that has two of the three legs of the United States military's nuclear triad. They have bombers with nuclear weapons, and they have ground-based missiles, the Minuteman missiles. And then they store over half of the United States their nuclear weapon system. So they have a lot of responsibility. And so the security force squadron is very important. Somewhere along the line, with all of these, now sergeants and others having this memo or this text message, somebody determined that it was intended to be a security threat message, and they forwarded it out to all of the personnel on the base. Obviously, with misinformation. Obviously, Turning Point is not a threat to the military. If anything, they're the most supportive group for the military you have in mind. So anyway, here's what concerned me, that it could happen at all, Charlie, concerns me, that anybody could mistake, your rally in Minot, North Dakota for something that could lead to a confrontation, or that somebody could actually be thrown out of the Air Force if they attended. Bad messages, all wrong, and then there's not a better filter. So that's my first problem. But the response wasn't great and still isn't great. Because I don't know if you noticed, but we did, because we're keeping close track of it. They did not correct their website or their Facebook page till yesterday afternoon, 4 days after the event. And so They were dealing with the internal issue, perhaps, by sending a correction. They claim they sent a corrected message, rescinding the original one within 52 minutes of the first one going out. Okay, congratulations. Somebody no doubt said, you might want to take another look at this. And they rescinded it and sent out a new message. But they didn't inform the public of any of this until, well, really until it became known to you and a whole bunch of other people yesterday. That's inadequate to me.
Senator, thank you for addressing that. And you know, I do think we have to get answers from the top level of whether or not there's some sort of policy of conservative groups that are not welcome. What concerned us, Senator, is they said that you might be discharged. I'm paraphrasing, but your service might be put in jeopardy if you indeed attended the rally. And Senator, I think this what's troubling a lot of our audience, and thank you for addressing it, is that this seems to be a pattern that we're seeing at certain elements of the military. Our military is the best on the planet with amazing people, but it does seem to be a disturbing pattern of, for example, just the other day we've learned that over $100 million was spent on diversity, equity, inclusion programming from the Pentagon. Senator, can you speak to this pattern that we are seeing? And whistleblowers are coming out to say, as soon as Joe Biden came over, the military has taken a rather radical turn. Your reaction, Senator?
So this, I addressed this directly with General Alcon yesterday. He and I were at the Minot Air Force Base together just last month. We spent an entire day there with the airmen. We participated in lots of events, lots of meetings, lots of touring, and I'll leave that at that. But when I addressed the drift, what I called a leftward drift, and by the way, if this same scenario was carried out regarding a rally put on by Black Lives Matter, I suspect that person that did it would be fired by now. That's a radical. I think we have to always remember, while we have the best military in the world, an all-volunteer force, only a patriot would sign up to do it, in my mind. We have this other wonderful exceptionalism that it was given to us by our founders, and that is that our military is not led by generals, but rather it is led by civilians. And I think your point that since Joe Biden became commander-in-chief, that we've seen this drift to the left is because Joe Biden is commander-in-chief. When the commander-in-chief is Joe Biden, Jake Sullivan is the National Security Advisor, Lloyd Austin is the Secretary of Defense, you're going to have a different political bent. My problem with it is that it's infiltrated quickly. It's given a green light to people on the left within the military. It's shedding a bad light on our military, and we have to stop it now because, as you know, they have a problem recruiting people into our services. And this isn't going to help it any, because what we want is we want people that listen to Charlie Kirk to sign up for the military. We want people who love America, who love God, who love freedom, and who will die. And, they should, in fact, in my mind, I think we should encourage our military men and women to be active in politics. And, right? I mean, the very thing they're putting their lives on the line for, they should also be able to, and even encouraged to exercise.
So, Senator, you pinpointed something that I really want to talk about, which is military recruitment is down. It's down the worst level since Vietnam. When you address this with the members of the military, the general at Minot, what do they think is the problem? Because I'm sure they have some theory or explanation. I certainly do. It's become hostile to anyone that shares traditional values. But what do they tell you is the reason why we're so struggling to get recruits?
Well, some of what they tell me, and some of it's legitimate, I think, and that is that we have a workforce shortage in pretty much every industry in America. And so they are competing with much higher pay and much more, many benefits, better benefits in the private sector. And we know all of that to be true. We know that to be true in North Dakota. When the oil workers are making a lot more money driving trucks than they can, driving tanks, obviously it's harder to recruit them. I don't dismiss any of that, Charlie. But at the same time, we should be making it more appealing for people to want to join our military as opposed to less appealing. And I think this leftward drift really does have an impact, because the people most inclined to put their life on the line for freedom are people that they seem to look at as though they're second-class citizens. And so I think that is a contributing factor.
Yeah, and the Air Force especially used to be long immune from recruiting challenges, and it's just missed its goal for the first time in decades. The Marines it goes up and down. But the Air Force typically year after year hit its goals and hit its goals. And, you know, if you talk to people, the Army, by the way, is 25% down. And this is a national security threat. And if you talk to people in our audience, you know, Senator, the question that I get that is one of the hardest to answer is when a mom comes to one of our events or emails us and she says, Charlie, my son wants to serve the country and I'm not sure that I'm comfortable given the tilt of the military. That just that attitude alone is you have the willingness to serve and not the receptivity. So, Senator, amongst just kind of the general consensus with your Democrat colleagues that care about national security, you know, there's definitely some. Are they also seeing this? Can this be a rare moment of bipartisanship where we can depoliticize our armed forces, Senator Cramer?
I think it can be because you touched on when you said depoliticize. There's nobody of any political stripe that wants to see a hyper-politicized military. We all might love to see it leaning more our way one way or the other. But by and large, we want a politically neutral military. We don't want individuals who are politically neutral. We want them to have the same rights and freedoms of expression that anybody does. By the way, I actually have the rules of ethics here that actually highlight that very point, that allow partisan political activity within a military. But as an institution, we don't want that. And so I do think there's an opportunity with my Democrat friends. As you know, I'm on the Senate Armed Services Committee. I don't know a single Democrat on the Senate Armed Services Committee that doesn't want a stronger military. Maybe one or one. But we had, for example, the National Defense Authorization Act. We only had one vote against the Defense Authorization Act this year on the Armed Services Committee. And so, yeah, I think it's an opportunity, a learning experience. And we ought to get after it as soon as we get back. One thing I will tell you, I want to bring the Chief of Staff of the Air Force or some other high-ranking Air Force official before the committee to go over line by line, you know, the entire clock and calendar of events that led to this event in my net, because I think you're right. It's just one expression of many that are currently going on.
Well, thank you, Senator. That means a lot to us. And not just for us. It's just for the country, right? I mean, that story was viewed by millions of people. And you have to imagine that a conservative American thinking of joining the Air Force, God bless them. You know, they say, boy, is that really something I want? And also, it's such an overreach of policing, like local political involvement. And the subtext, and they didn't say this explicitly, is they're almost alluding that Turning Point is like a terrorist organization. Like if you go here, that you could be kicked out on, you know, moral qualms. And so I just want to encourage you, Senator, this is a great fight for you. You've been a real champion of our armed forces and the strength of the country. And it's happening here in North Dakota. Final thoughts, Senator, and thank you for the time.
Well, I'm happy to, and thank you for the opportunity to do, Charlie, because I raised this very point again with General Alvin. I mean, the Chief of Staff of the Air Force, we were just in Minot. We saw a lot of good things and we saw some concerning things. But here's the bottom line. Here's what I want in my military, and this is what I tell everybody. I want a military that stays focused on their mission. And the military's mission is pretty obvious. First and foremost, deter our enemies from attacking us or our allies. And that you can only do that with a strong military. And by the way, with a commander-in-chief who's demonstrated and projected strength. And we have one that has not, by the way. Another whole show. And then if that doesn't work, they need to be able to kill our enemies. And worrying about political activism, particularly just, you know, attending a Turning Point USA event, is hardly that. In fact, I think it works against them. There's a lot more to learn about this, Charlie. We're going to continue to dig into it. We'll keep you informed. And by the way, one of the things I suggested yesterday to the Air Force leadership is that they start with an apology to Turning Point for this message. I mean, a sincere one, because I know that's not what's in the heart of our leaders in the Air Force, and certainly not of the airmen and women. The airmen in Minot, Grand Forks, Fargo. We have a Space Force station in Cavalier, by the way, as well. Space Force, by the way, does always meet their recruiting goals, because it's the, sort of the new Air Force in terms of the place the cool kids want to go. But all of that, and we'll just keep you informed. I hope an apology is forthcoming. In fact, I think they should get on your show. They should put somebody on your show to explain what happened. And I encourage that of them. I said, it's not enough to send out a correction 4 days later. You need to get out front on this and talk to the American people about what happened and why it was just a mistake and not a new trend in our Air Force or our military.
Yeah, for our national security. Senator, thank you for that. And we'd be willing to accept an apology if it's clear and honest. Everyone makes mistakes, but I'm afraid it's a trend, and I hope we learn more. Senator Kramer, happy Thanksgiving. And also, Mary and Carmen, hope to see you guys soon, and have a great Thanksgiving. Herzog Foundation. For years, I've been talking about our nation's public schools and how they've been captured by progressive ideologues, teaching things that directly contradict the values of American families. That's especially true if you are a Christian family. For those of you worried about the best educational path for your kids and grandkids, I'm pleased to announce our new partnership with the folks at the Herzog Foundation. They are the trusted source on American K-12 private education with a remarkable suite of resources for parents and grandparents thinking about making the switch from public schools to a Christian education. They have an online publication called The Lion to their new podcast, Making the Leap. The Herzog Foundation offers a wide range of advice and information for Christian parents to make the best education decisions for their kids. To learn more about how your family, faith, and community can flourish through a quality Christian education, go to HerzogFoundation.com. That is HerzogFoundation.com. That's HerzogFoundation.com. Yeah, I've seen this bridge before. I've never been on it. Rainbow Bridge connecting U.S. and Canada at Niagara Falls has been closed after a vehicle explosion. That it might just be an accident, or it could be an act of terrorism. I will say, though, yesterday there was a terrorism bulletin that was posted about New York that kind of got ignored. So maybe it's just a coincidence. Let me try to find this here. There was one yesterday where they raised the threat assessment to New York. But yeah, yesterday they raised the terror threat assessment. So hopefully it's not a terrorist attack. But that is a serious bridge. That the bridge has been closed after a vehicular explosion. That would be a very weird place to bomb, maybe just a normal accident. And so who knows? Maybe it's tied with the Israeli hostage deal. I'm not so sure. So Israel has just agreed to a ceasefire for 4 days in return to get some hostages. And I am curious about you in the audience. Do you support the ceasefire? I personally don't like it, and I'll tell you why. I mean, I don't like that the international pressure basically has blackmailed Israel into this. They're going to try to keep rolling this into a 4 day, a 1 week, a 2 week ceasefire. The mission for Israel has been very clear, which is to eliminate Hamas. And war is one of the messiest things that human beings do. It's the worst thing, honestly, that we do. And so doesn't this just give Hamas an opportunity to game the system? I don't trust anything that Hamas does. Nothing. But look, Israel has a different way of doing things. Israel has a value on hostage life far greater than any other country in the world. In fact, Israel famously would trade hundreds, if not thousands, of prisoners just for a single Israeli citizen. I have to say that we are very honest on this program, and people call us anti-Semites because we dare be honest. It is so silly, okay? And it's wrong and it's harmful. But credit to the IDF, militarily they've been excellent once they have gotten into Gaza. They've been great once they got in. Some of their social media stuff has been awful. The Israeli government going after Hadid and the supermodel, these op-ed in the Jerusalem Post of the Israeli intelligence minister. It's awful. I sent out a tweet yesterday, and I stand by the tweet 100%, and the typical morons are coming after me. Oh, how dare you? You know, you're anti— Stop it. And I said, look, the Israeli we did a whole show on this. Hila Hamil, the intelligence minister of Israel, wrote an op-ed calling for a worldwide refugee resettlement scheme to move 2 million Gazans out of Israel into the rest of the world. By the way, when I did this, I had someone text me. They said, Charlie, what is your evidence that the Israeli government— it's like, well, this is the op-ed, right? I'm not making this up. It is in the Jerusalem Post, written by the current Israeli intelligence minister. And you couple that with the Wall Street Journal piece of Danny Danon, and I think it's Ram Barak, I might be getting his name wrong, but they're both former Mossad and current Knesset. Gamil says that once Gazans are gone, quote, Israeli communities could then return to their homes and communities and live in safety. She says nothing about a life that will be for the people in Paris or London or Detroit who will be expected to then house these Hamas lovers. Here's what I don't like about this framing. And I call balls and strikes, and I'm cheering for Israel. And by the way, the end of the tweet I thought was perfect, which is, I support Israel, so I say this in goodwill. If the members of the Israeli government keep up putting garbage op-eds like this, they will destroy their support among Western conservatives. And I should have added, which is their base. That is their base, is Western conservatives. And they're destroying their base by doing that. And by the way, a lot of Jews that I'm talking about say this is talking to, they think it's the dumbest thing ever. I don't know why the Israeli government is doing it. And here's what I don't like. Here's the subtext of all of the two op-eds. We can't live near these people because they're obviously terrorists that want to kill us. And why don't you Westerners want to take these sweet people, you bigots? Wait, what? So these people are terrorists that we can't coexist with. And so, hey, Westerners, take them or else you're bad and awful and evil. Not evil, but they did. Danny Danon said you have a moral imperative. Danny Danon in the Israeli government says that we in the West have a moral obligation to clean up this mess for Israel. No, we don't. Now, there are big political divisions in Israel, but this, honestly, Israel, I'm going to keep on giving you unsolicited advice. From Netanyahu on down, Herzog, who's the president of Israel, you guys have to be in unison. Western world, you do not have to take these refugees. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening. God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.
When I grow up, I want to work for a woke company, like super woke.
When I grow up,
I want to be hired based on what I look like
rather than my skills.
I want to be judged
by my political beliefs.
I want to get promoted
based on my chromosomes.
When I grow up,
I want to be offended
by my coworkers
and walk around the office
on eggshells
and have my words policed
by HR.
Words like
grandfather,
peanut gallery,
long time no see,
no can do.
When I grow up,
I want to be obsessed with emotional safety
and do workplace sensitivity training
all day long.
When I grow up, I want to climb the corporate ladder
just by following the crowd.
I want to be a conformist.
I want to weaponize my pronouns. What are pronouns?
It's time to grow up and get back to work. Introducing the number one woke-free job board in America, RedBalloon.work.